Hello, thank you for listening to Smart Mouth. I am your host, Catherine Spires. I am on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast and on Facebook in a private group. Search for Smart Mouth, which is two words, and request to join. I'll let you join. Also, please check out this podcast Patreon and even join the Patreon if you're so inclined. Even $1 a month is hugely appreciated. And that is at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. This week's guest is Sheldon Simeon, and if you're a Top Chef watcher, you know who he is, and he is delightful. He joined me the day after doing a pop-up at a restaurant here in Los Angeles called Here's Looking at You, the owner of which, Lynn Ta, was once my editor at AOL at a sub-site called City's Best. Millennials, they've all got a dozen careers. Anyway, Sheldon and the cooks got wild after said pop-up dinner. And Sheldon told me that he'd just had the breakfast of champions, 4 Advil and a lot of water. Do you normally have that champions breakfast?
not normally, but we celebrated a little bit last night. It was fun. Went out with the crew from Here's Look at You, and we just enjoyed the town for sure.
Do you call it a pop-up if you already have your own restaurant?
Yeah, it's still a pop-up. You pop it and you go into someone else's spot and that's not yours.
Okay, so that's popping up.
Yeah, that's popping up. One example, on our luau plate last night, they had a pipikaula short rib that took 7 days to prepare.
Oh my gosh.
Of babying. I mean, they marinated it and then they dried it over the embers and then marinated it and they sprayed it. They took it out for walks, went slept with it. They took him to the vet. I don't know, like every little thing that you could be doing for this, just that amazing bite. So
is that your recipe though?
That was not my recipe. That was theirs. That we collabed on a tray. I did 3 dishes. They did a few, 4 dishes.
Oh, okay. And, I see.
Yeah.
So, did you have to ask them to prep any of your dishes before you came into town?
No, we did. They sourced it all. And yeah, we went in there. We cooked together. And shout out to the crew. They held it down. I had to prep a bunch of other things going on. So they jumped in and everyone's so healthy and made it successful, man. Without those guys and the hands of all the cooks, it couldn't have happened.
I like this. I like this sort of what seems like a new style of cooks being collaborative.
Yeah.
And friendly.
Hey, that's what it's all about, right? We're like-minded people that share the same passion and we just elevate each other. That's what it is for me. I love sharing. I love going out and being able to share a little bit of what I do with other people and vice versa, and I'm learning from everyone.
Do you ever yell at your staff?
Oh, I mean, purposefully, I guess. Yeah, yelling at the staff. Motivating.
So you hit when you yell. So you're here from Hawaii. Hawaii is where you live.
Yep, Maui.
Maui, specifically.
Specifically.
I feel like most people would probably recognize you from Top Chef.
Yeah, 2 seasons of Top Chef.
That's a lot of seasons. That's one more than most contestants do.
Yeah, it's a lot of episodes for sure.
Yeah, and then on Google, like the main thing that comes up under your picture on the right, when you Google your name, it says Top Chef Indonesia.
What?
So I take it you've never done Top Chef Indonesia.
I mean, I don't even know. In what lifetime was that, but... who is this person?
Yeah, the thing is, you could have forgotten because you are so busy. You get up to so many things.
Yeah, we're doing it. You know, it's I've got a family to provide for, and Top Chef, and everything else. This gift, Lord had gave me all of these opportunities. So mm-hmm. Uncle always said, when there's waves, you ride it.
Oh, that's here nice. I am. I like that. Are you running the one restaurant right now?
I have 2 restaurants. Mm-hmm. Tin Roof has just made 3 years.
Nice.
Shout out to the crew at Tin Roof. Small little lunch shop. Only opens 6 days a week, 4 hours a day. And serving comfort local Hawaii food, I guess our take on it.
Uh-huh.
And then I just opened up Lineage Restaurant in Wailea, the south side. And that's been open since October.
Okay, so brand I've
been
new baby.
I've been staying put in Maui for a little bit, just focusing on that. And but here we are. Now, the crew has been amazing. We had an amazing opening, and everyone's been so supportive. And now I get to go and talk about it and cheer on those guys as they continue on with the vision, I guess.
How often are you in the kitchen?
I love it. Anytime I'm back home, I try to be in the kitchen as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And again, there's all these opportunities. There's so many other things that's going on in the middle of a cookbook, and always looking for other community things and doing all kinds of other stuff. So I'm definitely busy, but if I could be in the kitchen every day, that's where I'd be.
You know, all the food writers talk about how your publicist keeps you moving too.
Oh yeah.
She doesn't give you any downtime.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, shout out to Boaster.
Nicole, on that hustle.
Nicole keeps it tight.
That's so funny. It's like a known thing for the food writers. Which means she's doing her job. Yeah. I just hope you get to sleep sometimes.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
That's good.
Hopefully I get some better breakfast.
Yeah, better than Advil. That shouldn't be too hard. So, rice, one of your favorite foods?
Oh, my absolute favorite.
Absolute favorite.
Well, I have to have it. It's my one thing. I've had to try it. I know if I give it up, I'd be a lot more healthier, but it's that one thing I need. I don't know. True and true Filipino Hawaii boy.
Yeah.
I love rice.
Is it like every day?
Every day.
Okay. More than one meal?
More than every meal I try. I wish. I would eat rice with every meal, man.
Okay.
If I did, yeah.
Is there a particular kind of rice?
Oh, in Hawaii, we just eat, you know, just cow roast, just regular medium grain rice.
Mm-hmm.
We buy big old 50-pound bags of rice. It's like what your responsibility as growing up as a kid is, you know, wash and make sure the rice is on.
Because okay.
If not, ooh, there'll be some furniture moving up in that. Oh, man. Every time you get around with the friends that we reminisce, you know, we always like talk about stories, and the rice story always comes up. Everyone has a story about playing in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment that you see your parents drive in the driveway and you forgot that you had to cook the rice. Oh, man. Everybody who out there who's feeling that, they know about that moment when that energy that comes over you is like, oh, my God, I'm about to get the craziest yelling or beating of my life. But there is no rice that has been cooked. You had one responsibility,
right? You
right?
had to do one thing.
You had to do one thing.
Right.
And that's it.
You're living under our roof and you couldn't remember to put the rice on.
Or what, that moment, the other moment is that you're proud of yourself. I got the rice going or whatever. And then you just hear, Sheldon! It's like, what's up? You didn't press cook.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
That would be terrifying. So we're talking rice cooker rice.
Rice cooker rice, for sure.
Yeah. Do you ever do it in a pot? Super old school?
No, because, yeah, no, rice cooker is the first thing. It's like a housewarming gift in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Rice cooker.
It's interesting. It's one of those, like, it only has one use, and a lot of cooks will make fun of kitchen gadgets that you can only use for one thing. But rice cookers are, like, actually really good at what they do.
That's it, man. I just got this, the Rolls Royce of rice cookers.
What is it?
Yeah, it's this Japanese zurizushi rice cooker. It's, I don't know what it does, but the rice is perfect. It's like one of the most expensive rice cookers on Amazon. I know that.
So in Hawaii, is it like everybody who lives there has the same idea of what perfectly cooked rice is? Or is it like if you go to someone else's house, they do it differently?
I think in general, you know, Hawaii's rice is very sticky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not something, they're definitely not separating style rice.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, yeah, the rice in Hawaii is that sticky style.
Okay.
Not so Thai sticky rice, not Thai style sticky, but yeah, definitely clumped together.
Is it like approaching sushi rice, but it's not sushi rice?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't like add anything to it?
No.
Right.
That it's that moment of the Hawaii's food so delicious. It's so much flavors going on, right? Mm-hmm. It's big and bold, and that's what rice is. That is that balance to the yin to the yang.
Name one item that you're especially proud of on each of your restaurant's menus.
Oh man, yeah.
Only one each.
One each, right? Well, for Tin Roof, it has to be our mochiko chicken. We sell like 50% of our sales.
Just one dish?
Just this one dish, mochiko chicken. And it's the fried chicken of Hawaii.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it uses rice flour for the cool, crispy texture to it. But we take it to the next level by marinating it and frying it twice and putting sumiso on top and gochujang mayonnaise and crispy rice crackers and furikake and all of this good stuff.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's delicious. Sweet, a little spicy, a lot of umami.
Yeah.
Big old bowl of rice on the bottom. At Lineage, it would have to be my family's pork and peas. It's a very simple Filipino dish that is stewed pork and tomato gravy, and then just peas right on top of it. It's almost exactly how my family makes it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we put a little bit of pea shoots on top for some garnish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exactly like how my dad taught me and my uncle taught my dad, and the way that we cook it. And as a chef, even like like 5 years ago, I wouldn't have the confidence to put something simply on the table like that. I'd have to be, let's figure how to deconstruct this and elevate this and make it, you know, whimsical or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome that I get to put a part of my lineage right there and share it with everyone.
Yeah, yeah. I think very slowly restaurant goers in the U.S. are becoming more comfortable with the idea of like going to an elegant restaurant and not having it just be European food.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
paying right? A lot for non-European food.
Yeah, no food racism.
Right, we're trying.
You don't need that.
So rice is the second largest crop in terms of acreage in the world after wheat. However, 95% of all the rice grown in the world is actually eaten by humans, which is a huge number. Because overall, all the world's grain that is grown, only 40% of it is eaten by humans.
Oh,
so it's like we keep the good stuff, I guess.
Wow.
We must really like rice because we're not just like letting the cows eat it.
Yeah. No.
And we're not using it to make plastic substitutes.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. It is the main source of food for about 3 billion people.
Whoa.
Which is like half of us.
I'm not alone.
Yeah, no, you're definitely not. And this is such a funny stat to me. It is 20% of all the calories that humans consume is rice.
Rice. Okay. You're getting that fuel from that rice.
Yeah, exactly. It's fueling a lot of different people. There are 120,000 different varieties of rice.
I only need one in my life.
Yeah, that's right. Were you born in Hawaii?
Born and raised, true and true.
Mm-hmm.
Cut me open, I bleed 808. That's it.
I like that. That's really cool. My grandma's from Hawaii.
Okay.
And it does seem definitely like people who are from Hawaii, like it's like a fraternity. But like a good fraternity.
Yeah, yeah. We like to call it Ohana or family, but fraternity, yeah. For the people that's listening in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm a complete mainlander. It's a fraternity. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. There's a whole term for it. Ohana. That's
Samalama
nice.
Kamehameha. That's it. Whatever. By Kappa Aloha. I don't know. Whatever fraternity that is.
In the Philippines, there's this institute that only studies rice.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. And they've made these new kinds of rice, too.
Yeah.
Like more vitamins and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's rice bar here in LA that I've been always wanting to go. Shout out to the Filipino chefs of LA.
That's right.
And yeah, it's so much a part of our culture. like I said, on the table, it's the rice. It's the most important thing. Hawaii was a big, actually. We grew a lot of rice at one point in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the taro fields. Taro was the main source of for Hawaiians. But a lot of the taro fields turned into rice fields at one point. And at one point, we were exporting about 1 million pounds of rice out of Hawaii.
That's a lot of rice.
Yeah. And the first wave of immigrants to come work on the plantations were the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And they... long grain rice, so everything was, and that still was the rice that that was grown in Hawaii, and then the Japanese came in,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't like the rice,
right?
Because it didn't stick together. I can make my sushi, and it slowly faded away, and other cultures influenced, but it was crazy. Well, they were known for hapa rice in Hawaii. Hapa means half, right?
Or, mm-hmm.
And it wasn't by choice. I just learned this.
Yeah?
I just learned this. It was because the grinders were shitty.
Oh, really?
So they didn't get the whole... It didn't grind all the way. So it was a blending. So it became hopper rice. So we're working with a farmer up here in California to bring us back that heirloom variety of rice. And we're going to mill it so that it's like hopper rice to serve at Lineage.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So was the person that you found in California, were they already growing other kinds of rice?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because California grows a lot of rice, and it does because of the Japanese immigrants mm-hmm. at the early part of the 1900s.
Yeah.
Do you know when it was that Hawaii was at its like rice peak?
I do not know off the top of my head.
I wonder if it was around the same time, because I know that California, when they were known specifically for rice, was at the same time that Australia mm-hmm. figured it out. So it seemed like a like southern and eastern Pacific Rim thing, that they were like, let's sell some rice.
Yeah.
And why not? Have you ever tried to get into brown rice?
I like brown rice.
You said that with kind of a sad face.
Yeah. And like majority of the brown rice, but we have this harvest style brown rice that we serve at Tin Roof.
Mm-hmm.
That is a blending of like 6 different wild rice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delicious. I'll eat that brown rice, but no. If there's an option, I'm choosing white rice all day though.
I mean, it sounds like you're kind of describing something different.
Yeah.
A blend of rices,
but that's why we call it our brown rice.
Okay. Yeah, that makes it more appealing, I suppose. So a rice grain has...
Rice production was established in the early 1860s in Hawaii.
Okay. Yeah. The agricultural crops of Hawaii kind of switched a lot depending on who was running things.
Yeah. Sugar was the big thing. You know, there's no sugarcane plantations anymore. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of land that's being reconverted to farming. Well, hopefully it's farming. I'm just putting it out there in the universe. There's a little bit of it that is being farmed, and then the rest of it, we need to figure out what we're going to do with it.
There's a lot of fighting, legal battles in Hawaii right over land.
Yeah. Yeah. It's who has the water rights and who has the rights to the land, and you know, there's so many layers of history in Hawaii to do with land control. The Hawaiian people were overthrown, you know? There's a rich, real deep history between all of the swaying palm trees and the aloha, the flower lays, and this paradise. If you peel it back, it's crazy, the history of Hawaii.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, once the Europeans and white Americans discovered it, they just went nuts.
Discovered? Think about that.
I know.
Think about that, people. You can't discover when there's people there.
Sorry. I honest to God.
I got you.
I meant discovered for themselves. Right. I really swear that I did. Absolutely people there for many, many years before white people stumbled upon it. Yeah, I know. You got to be careful about language. I messed up.
I got you.
Now I'm totally flustered. Let's talk about what race is, and not just because I'm trying to change the subject. Wait, do you know when your family got to Hawaii?
Yeah, my family got there in the 30s. 1930s. You know, my grandparents were the part of the Sakatas, who were the first wave of Filipinos to come to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about all the different cultures that eat rice, and that's why Hawaii is a big rice eating state. You know, Filipinos, Chinese, Japanese, Puerto Ricans, all eat rice. And my grandparents were there. They were teenagers when they got to Hawaii, and they worked on the sugarcane plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was from the Philippines. I don't know.
The sugarcane plantation shut down while they were still working in it?
No. They worked in it. My dad worked. He contributed 25 years to the sugar plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a lot of my other family members and other people, my neighbors all around, all went through that. Went through working on the sugar plantations.
Interesting. When did you know that you wanted to make money off of cooking?
Oh man. I grew up cooking always. My dad is an amazing cook.
Mm-hmm.
We were the family that always cooked for these large gatherings in Hawaii. You can't just have a small party for your first birthday.
Uh-huh.
Or a high school graduation party or a wedding, you know. These are upwards of 750 plus people.
Oh my God.
Coming to your party. Hey, we're just having a get together. Let's cook for 1,000 people. And where were we when we were talking about?
When you wanted to actually make money cooking for 1,000 people. You're like, hey, come on.
Yeah, I'm cooking. I'm already doing it. So I might as well get paid for it.
Yeah.
Not till culinary school. I wanted to be an architect. Uh-huh. going through high school, and I wanted to do that. And my brother, who is 3 years older than me, he went into culinary.
Yeah.
And since we grew up cooking our whole lives, he kind of breezed through culinary school. And I was like, maybe that's a good route for me.
Yeah.
And once I got into it, I loved every little thing about it, and knew exactly that's what I wanted to do.
Are you still into architecture?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
That's what I love going into. And traveling and going into these restaurants and places and seeing all the material. I was just lying down in my bed this morning at the Line Hotel, and it's just looking at all of the different lines that is in there. It's pretty rad.
Yeah. Well, that's fun. So did you have like a hand in actually designing your restaurants?
I did. Yeah. It was super fun. I loved that process. This last restaurant was really, really fun. Shout out to Brenda and Jeremy.
You're so nice. You shout out so many people. It's so nice.
I gotta
of
put
you.
On the crew. It's it's the reason for my success and the reason for I'm here. You know that I get to talk about my friends and all of these cool producers who make it all happen.
Yeah. No, I like this. You know, every chef that I've had on this show has been perfectly lovely. But I do think that there's a little bit of traditionally there's been some arrogance among chefs, especially male chefs, but yeah. This new friendly vibe seems like it puts your head in a better space.
Life's too short. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to cook and make people happy, and it's difficult to get to make it so that it's a career. And the only reason I'm successful is because of everybody else that who lends a hand. That's what it is.
Yeah,
that's more important to me. It's like I put the food on, but to get it there, and there's a lot of work that goes.
But you're allowed to be like, also, I'm really good at cooking.
Yeah, I guess. I'll never take that.
So other things that make people happy: 92% of all the rice in the world is it's raised in Asia still, a third of it in China and a fifth of it in India. And there are two kinds of cultivated rice: domesticated, cultivated, grown on purpose rice. There's the kind that grows in Africa, This is speaking in the most general terms. And then there's the kind that grows in Asia. And actually, what we call wild rice in North America, that is native to sort of the Great Lakes, Upper Midwest region, it's totally unrelated to both the Asian and African rice. Oh. It's a type of grass, okay, just like the other rice, but it's from a completely different family. It's got nothing to do with it. The rice that we eat is related to grass, like lawn grass, and it's related to bamboo, and it's related to marijuana.
Okay.
Which I didn't realize that calling marijuana grass like actually made botanical sense.
Yeah.
And in fact, the plant, the like mother plant that rice comes from is called Oryza sativa.
Huh. There you go. It's all connected.
Yeah. The two main strains of it are the japonica and the indica, the two subspecies. So those are the oldest cultivated species, like 10,000 to 14,000 years ago in China. That's probably where it originated from. The Oryza glabrima, that's the kind that's grown in Africa, and that wasn't domesticated until like 1500 BC. So it's like 10,000 years younger than the Asian kind. And both of those kinds, we think about like rice paddies, mm-hmm, you know, and like marshy and tropical and all that, but they actually can be grown in desert-ish okay areas outside of wetlands. They're adaptable, and that's one of the reasons why we eat so much rice.
Eats it all.
Yeah.
I went to a trip to the Philippines, mm-hmm, and went to Baguio City, and they have these rice paddies that is on the side of the mountain. It's like one of the most amazing sights my eyes has ever seen, and yeah, that was breathtaking. It's crazy that they work so hard on this, literally on the side of the mountain. There's these terraces of rice paddies.
Like, you see the people working to actually grow the rice now, and then you also think about the work that went into actually building the terraces.
Right?
I can't even imagine.
There was this 80-year-old farmer that he had his farm on the side of the mountain, and we went to go visit his organic farm, and he was walking up and down, and I was huffing and puffing.
Right.
Going like, you do this every day. It was amazing.
Did you like learn anything new about rice on that trip?
That it's definitely equally important. That rice is always there. It's always in the middle, and they make sure it's cooked. That seems to be the theme of today. Make sure the rice is cooked, people. Yeah. Press your rice cooker before leaving the house.
That's do you make your kids cook rice?
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing that they do. Bringing around tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a
responsibility.
How old is a kid in your world when they start having to handle the rice, be in charge of the rice?
That they can wash their own pots and then bring a chair to the sink so that they have to step on it. So whatever, you know, my daughter was 4, I think. And mm-hmm, then and we're 5 years old. Go ahead. If you can do it and you understand it.
Yeah.
You want the responsibility.
Yeah.
Or not want, but you're getting it. That's it.
How old is your oldest now?
She's 12.
Has she been given more food chores?
Yeah, she loves it. Well, all my kids except my son. Well, so I have 3 daughters, mm-hmm, 12, 9, 7, and then a 5-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my daughters all cook. They cook their own eggs. Everyone wants different styles. So I was like, you guys cook your guys' eggs.
I like it. So, I like it. Yeah. Self-sufficient. That's good.
Yeah. And so, my oldest one, she's amazing. Chloe loves to cook. You can go on my Instagram and you can see us making chow fun noodles together if you want to
see that.
That's
amazing. Oh, that's sweet. Are you away from Hawaii like half your time or?
Yeah, I'm away quite often, mm-hmm, especially in this last few years, ever since Top Chef. It's been a whirlwind of being away. It's mm-hmm tough. I'm just so blessed that I got to go back home to Maui.
Yeah.
Shucks.
It seems like it's a pretty good home.
There's nothing else like it. Maui just, once you walk out of that plane, it hugs you. And I don't know, I cannot describe that feeling. It's just like this moment There's a aloha spirit in general in Hawaii, but there's something special about returning back to Maui for sure.
You think Maui is different from the other islands?
Each island is unique and different. Maui has just been my home, and my community has been amazing to my family. So, yeah, Maui's home.
If you had to move to a different island, which one would it be?
I'd move back home to... I lived on the Big Island. That's where I was born and raised.
Okay.
I'd like to grow old there.
Yeah?
Back in my old town. Of, you know, get a somewhere out in the country. A few acres.
Uh-huh.
Surrounded by banana trees and tea leaves. Some animals walking around. And a big old fire pit in the back. And the kitchen. And that's it. That's all I need.
That sounds amazing. That sounds so good. I love it. Would you grow rice if you had a couple acres?
Oh, man. Maybe. I've never thought about that, growing rice.
It's weird because it's not bad for the environment. And I feel like we're getting to the point in the on the planet where a lot of the staple crops, commodity crops, are actually becoming a little bit bad for the environment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Part of that is because they're like being monocultures.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same thing like with sugarcane, you know? It's like was so mono cropped that the soil is dead now. So
yeah.
We're bringing it back in Hawaii.
Yeah. It's hard to do. It takes a long time once you've ruined soil.
Yeah.
To like make it healthy again.
Yeah. But there's ways. It's all about just growing food to feed the community. That's what I hope they do with the sugar, the fields.
With the sugar fields?
Yeah, sugarcane fields.
So do you want them to become sugarcane fields again?
No, I want them to become food that feeds our community. That's what I want. I want something that we don't need to be, you know, being Hawaii being the most isolated landmass in the world, we have to import a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's a huge percentage of food is imported.
Right.
When Hawaii was sustainable, that's a little over 100 years ago, completely.
Yep.
And it went so quickly. And we can go back to that time and learn a lot from history and take those techniques that the ancient Hawaiians use and apply it. Feed our family, feed our own people.
I mean, I think that seems really smart.
You seem that way, but it's difficult. I don't know.
Of course. You know how it goes, yeah. Right? Yeah. No, so, I mean, you know, smart things are difficult to attain, it seems like a lot of times. But... not only for the culture, but for the planet, because we're just heating it right up. We're like the boiling toads in the pot, you know? We don't even realize what we're doing.
It's going quick.
Yeah, it really is. It's terrible, which is why rice is like a good crop. It can grow in places that have been flooded. Like people have successfully grown rice out of 16 feet of water. And the way that it filters air cleans up the environment. And then also you can bring in fish and ducks and stuff, and they live really happily in the rice fields. So it becomes this like kind of its own enclosed system if you want it to be.
Right.
It's like protein and healthy air.
That's it. Let's grow rice paddies to save the world.
Everyone has to do it. Plus it would be good for us because, as you said, we'd be 80 years old and still having to like walk up and down the terraces.
Going through it all. not like this guy huffing and puffing.
And rice likes to consume things like that have already been decayed. So a lot of like rotted natural matter, it like consumes that up and then spews out fresh air. Rice is kind of this hero plant.
Yeah, and just chilling over there, right? They're just like these fields, and look at all of this stuff that it does.
Yeah, and you can get 3 crops out of it a year. Are we messing around with things like wheat?
It
makes no sense,
right?
And I feel like the U.S. is trying to force wheat on everybody. I don't know. It's not good.
You said wheat. Not weed.
No.
Not
well, weed. Although that too, like that would be good for the economy.
Yeah.
To grow weed.
Yeah.
Rice and weed.
Yeah.
Rice and marijuana, to be clear, for everyone at home.
Or hemp.
Yeah. Is marijuana legal in Hawaii?
Yeah. We don't have full dispensaries or anything like that, but you can.
Is it medical?
Yeah, you can medical.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's one option that everyone, you know, thinking about for the fields is to grow hemp. hemp does. It grows quick. Maybe we should do rice and hemp or something. Rice. I'm going to throw rice when I get back. I'm going to tell my farmer friends, what about rice?
Well, I think it's a really good idea. And apparently, 97%, which is a very specific number, but 97% of all the rice in the world is eaten in the country that grows it.
Okay.
So it remains like kind of a local crop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there's just a lot of things falling into place, a lot of arguments you can make on like your PowerPoint presentation about why Hawaii should start growing rice.
Yeah. Laying it all out right here. How about you just forward me those notes right there?
Like, I will. I totally will. Here you go. All the arguments. Speaking of mainland U.S., there is rice that's grown in two different areas of the U.S. One of them is California that we touched on before, and that grows a lot of Japanese-style rice because it was Japanese people who first planted it and brought it over here and made it into an industry. On the East Coast, it was enslaved people who had come from rice-growing regions in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And horribly enough and predictably enough, I guess, people who had been taken from rice-growing areas in Africa were sold for more money at the auctions because the white slave owners wanted to take their knowledge and learn how to grow rice and make a ton of money off of it. So that's our history, but that's a lot of the food history in the U.S.
Yeah.
Is stealing from African people.
Yeah. Well, from a lot of other cultures. And
yeah.
That has contributed to what making America great, right? They're all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to spend time in Charleston, so one of the great rice-growing regions of the country. And I seen a lot of similarities between the food that I had there and Hawaii and Filipino in general.
Really?
It's rice-eating community,
mm-hmm.
right? It had patties and these places. And then, like, a lot of the supporting food to go with the rice, you know, a lot of vegetables and stews the same way that where my grandparents came from, Ilocos, the north where they grow most of the rice. So it's pretty cool to see that I actually have a dish that is inspired by there.
Yeah,
and it's called Hoppin' Wands. It's our take on Hoppin' Johns.
That's amazing.
Hoppin' Wands. it's rice that is cooked down with some black-eyed peas instead of the Charleston red-eyed peas, but and some oxtail. So
oxtail is so good.
So good. I love all of those tasteful cuts on.
Yeah,
we serve a lot of random cuts in my restaurant.
That's
We do like turkey tails. We like
turkey tails.
We do oxtails. We do ham hocks, mm-hmm. and all of that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, people shouldn't overlook the tails.
Yeah, tails, beef tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of those offcuts. Everything's just gotta apply some care to it to make it delicious.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I felt like if you're gonna kill the animal, you should eat all of it.
Oh yeah, everything but the moo. You consume.
And then it ends up that things like tails and tongues taste the best anyway.
Right. Yeah, it served its purpose, so you have to use. I mean, it died for you, so
yeah,
use it all.
So when you were in Charleston, did you talk to the people there about like the similarities in your cultures?
It was weird. It was kind of weird just because I was on the TV show, so there wasn't a lot of communicating back and forth. It is a competition. But we got to experience it and just see it around and just being around it. We did have a lesson by Chef BJ Dennis, who does Gichi Gala cuisine down there. And that's where I was the most inspired by. It's just like home style, grubby food. Super delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're rooted in a lot of history.
Gichi Gala is getting a lot more media attention right now.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Actually, I think that Charleston has a really good tourism board. Is one of the things.
Yeah,
among
yeah.
it. And I think a lot of people who aren't in media don't understand how powerful and how influential tourism boards can be.
Yeah, I work very closely with Hawaii Tourism, and people travel for eating now, you know, for food.
Yeah.
That's everything. Like, they choose countries.
Yeah.
We're going on an eating tour, and they come, and I think people are more very interested in what each spot, like, real, like, what are the what is the people in their homes, what are they eating? They want to explore that even more. I think that's why chefs are bringing it around to a lot more wholesome food, things that they grew up with and of, very specific of where their restaurants are.
Where the restaurants are?
They're cooking the food of their region, I guess, so to say. A lot of people are much more connected to, and not ashamed of, like me. I was ashamed of, not ashamed, but we didn't celebrate our food that we ate at home, and I'd go to a restaurant and we cook different food for the consumer. And then we go in the back, and even on break, we're eating things different from what we're cooking for people.
Right.
I think it's starting to flip that the food that we eat and we enjoy, we're actually cooking and serving at our restaurants now.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely see a lot more of that. When you work with the Hawaii Tourism Board, so you're like, let's think of ways to tell people to come to Hawaii in terms of the food.
We go and we just talk about our history and like how you can come to Hawaii and celebrate all of these different flavors. You know, it's so broad. It's so beautiful to have all of these different ethnicities that influence Hawaii. So
yeah,
that's something to talk about. He's like, you want to come and eat Chinese food, Korean food, and Polynesian, and Hawaiian, and Puerto Rican, and all of that, all in one spot.
Yeah.
And see it all come together. It's like it's the original fusion food. Mm-hmm. It's not like somebody's like, let's take a little bit of this and let's do that. It just all kind of melded together seamlessly.
Yeah. And it is so good.
It's delicious.
One last point about the African rice that's grown in the United States. A lot of places will claim that Thomas Jefferson is the person who introduced rice to North America.
Okay.
And a lot of people say that Thomas Jefferson brought a lot of food to North America. And it's absolutely not true. It's just not true. And I think it's because it's an easier story to be like, Thomas Jefferson went to Europe and he liked this thing, so he brought it back.
Brought it back.
And every time I've encountered that, and I've been coming across it for years because I've been studying food history, it's when someone says, or when it's conventional wisdom that Thomas Jefferson brought it over, it's always that it's enslaved people. Always. Every single time. 100%. It's crazy. So as an overarching point, I just want people to understand that and to really think critically about the whole Thomas Jefferson mythos.
Yeah. Don't be giving Thomas Jefferson too much shout outs.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't need the shout outs.
Don't need no shout outs. He claiming and he ain't even producing.
Exactly. He doesn't. Yeah, exactly. Other people should get credit for things, ultimately. Oh my gosh.
You think people called him Tom or Tommy, or it was always Thomas?
That would really give us insight into how friendly he was.
I am only known as Thomas.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming over here and talking about rice.
Oh, this was a blast. I mean, I'm glad that rice was the subject.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like a good choice because you get to talk about the whole planet.
Yeah, perfect.
And that you're so passionate about it.
And we got to take care of it like the Hawaiians did. You take care of the land and it'll take care of you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Where can people find you on social media?
Check me out on all platforms at Chef Wonder, Instagram and all that. My IG stories be lit. Check it out. Come and see me down at Tin Roof on Maui at Lineage Maui out there in Wailea. And be good to each other.
Table Cakes production.